All right. Welcome to another thrilling episode of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Pellwood Fantasy Football League podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It is great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
Ready for football season. Is it football season yet?
You know,
Have the games started playing yet?
And I think that college is getting in with the program.
Who cares about that? And I almost got tricked into watching a preseason game tonight, like a fourth week preseason game, which is just completely worthless.
No,
like,
that's a bait and switch.
We might glean some information from the first 3 weeks of preseason, but the fourth week
is total
trash. Yeah. All the bench warmers, all the scrubs out there.
I'm pretty sure that like the third strings put their nephews in, I think is what happens.
You know, the drafts are done. Fantasy football drafts are done.
Indeed they are.
And ready for the games, you know. I'm just trying to figure out, like, what do I do with myself now?
I
can rack up the free agent transactions, which I'm want to do, but just ready for the games to start.
Get this party started. Man, what a draft that was. Looking forward to dissecting it with you, Pete. Here we are, just under a week out from our pre-Super Bowl, if you will, and I will. And man, it did not disappoint. Sir, I tip my hat to you. Thanks for organizing such a great weekend. Sure did love the golf game, the club, the experience, the overall organization that you had for the day. Thanks for making it very, very special. I sure did enjoy that.
It was a lot of fun. I'm glad it all worked out really very smoothly in terms of timing of schedules for when we teed off and finished up the round. You know, had a pretty brisk round of golf, and the weather was nice, and then had plenty of time to get over, get some food, and did all the technology setup we needed at the spot, and good location, and no technological issues didn't in the way of us having a good draft. So a great time for all who were present, and for those who weren't, we hope you can be there next year.
Yep. Now, Pete, I don't know about you. I'm feeling a little bit of pressure regarding this episode. The demand has just increased year by year. This is the hands down the favorite episode of most of the league, which is telling because we're not always kind in our in our evaluation and analysis of our fellow league managers. But there does just seem to be an excitement about this episode, the content, digging into the numbers and digging into our personal takeaway. Of course, we enjoy the opportunity to use measures that favor our own teams based on some people call that bias. I just call that results-based analysis is what I'm looking at. But I'm looking forward to talking about it. How are you feeling about going into the draft grade episode?
This is the episode. Yeah, this is the episode. And you could probably put all the passion and enjoyment and desire for this episode, and it surpasses all other episodes combined for the season.
Right.
So, you're right. There's a lot of pressure on here, and the demand is high. But I wanted to also check in with you and see how you're doing, because there was, you know, a rogue podcast created before the draft, even.
That's right.
A copycat podcast, if you will.
Sure.
And I wanted to see how you're doing, because there were some inferences made on that podcast towards production of this one, and I feel like it started to pick up a little traction among other members of the league in terms of the speed at which our podcasts are recorded. And I just wanted to check to make sure you're doing okay, because you are definitely the heart and soul, the brains and the brawn of this podcast. And, you know, I just show up and talk into a microphone for 45 minutes to an hour, but there is so much more that goes into it in terms of you figuring out how to produce such a high quality podcast. I just want to make sure your pride isn't too wounded by the chatter going on. Really directed at you.
Man, I mean, quite the opposite. I've never been more proud. They say that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. And I got to tell you, hearing your brother Andy come out with our trademark opening line and then dive into broadcasting, albeit the quality notwithstanding, I loved every minute of their TNR After Dark, and I am personally looking forward to more of their content. Now, granted, were they using it to, in a way, leverage me or guilt me or motivate me into cranking out these episodes on a quicker basis? I think so. I think that's what they were going for. I think there was an anticipation. Apparently, there was some kind of awareness that you and I had, in fact, recorded the episode, but it had not yet been produced because I had been focusing on my draft and the software coinciding with that. So I think they were just trying to put my feet to the fire a little bit. I certainly cranked it out, and you know, the drop was pretty similar in timing. I did not respond to their podcast. Otherwise, I probably would have edited the podcast with a little bit extra outtake and slander, but that was not to be. However, the timing was pretty coincidental. So personally, I didn't feel bruised as much as I felt just really imitated, and I, you know, honored a little bit in a way. At least by Andy. I think Ben was ready to blaze his own trail, but Andy was certainly paying homage left and right. But truthfully, you know, we have a standard of excellence here at TNR, and we're not going to let an episode go out the door unless it has gone through our multi-layer quality check. We have multiple staff here that are working very, very hard behind the scenes, ensuring quality in our broadcasting, quality in our even our audio. We have, of course, fact checkers. We don't let anything go out the door without analysis of the things that we say, making sure that you and I are 100% accurate all the time when we talk about how great our teams are compared to everybody else's. Those things are always scrutinized heavily. So, albeit, you know, were some shots fired? Was there maybe an inference that I had my priorities wrong? I mean, you know, that doesn't feel great. Just if we're going to get into that, I don't know.
Yeah, just dig deeper. It's okay. No, but I mean, in terms of quality, there's no comparison. Obviously, this is so different.
I'm going to have to coach Andy. I don't think he understands. He doesn't have to put his phone in his shoe before broadcasting. I don't know if they caught on to that or not, but yeah.
And you know, they don't care about that. It's sort of you know, ironically low quality, where they could probably do it better if they put a little bit of effort into it, and they choose not to, which is fine. That's their thing. You know, we've been doing this for a long time, so it's kind of like, you know, they're the up and coming new thing.
That's right.
Which is great. They did a really cool one episode. Let's see how much they can keep
looking
going,
forward to more. And Pete, let me ask you: have you ever gone back and listened to our early days?
No. I don't think I've ever listened to, you know, re-listened to a podcast more than once.
Gotcha. Well, that makes one of us sin. but I mean, you know, I fly a lot. I gotta find my entertainment where I can. I went back and I listened to some of our first episodes. This was a while ago. I think it was last season, but I was trying to remember, when did we actually start doing this? And I've been through a few studio computers since then and rebuilt a few and transferred files over. And I was trying to find the original and how we went about doing it. And honestly, I found it and it sounded terrible. The quality is awful. In fact, it was reminiscent of the production that Andy and Ben, no offense meant towards them, but it was it was a stark reminder of our humble roots and how, who knows? I mean, the sky is the limit. Andy and Ben have so much potential in their broadcasting future. And power to them. I really am excited. Truth be told, that was a darn entertaining listen. And
it was.
I meant it when I said, if our podcast is half as entertaining and half as funny as theirs was to me, I really hope that the other 10 guys in our league enjoy listening as much as we enjoy producing these. It's all in all, I think it adds to the league depth, not takes away, and it's just good memory makers in history.
I agree completely. Can I say I was a little bit surprised and maybe slightly disappointed with how clean theirs was? I felt like I was expecting it to just be, you know, full Howard Stern, balls to the wall,
a little bit more raunchy,
explicit tag needed. Yes. And it was fairly clean and fairly content packed in terms of football analysis, which surprised me. So good start for them. Very entertaining. Hope to see many more.
Indeed we do. So Pete, here we are. We have slept a few days since the draft. You and I both react to the draft differently, I've noticed over the years. I'm typically hyped up, and I've got a four-hour drive ahead of me most days on draft day. And I want to talk. I basically want to interview everybody in the league. In fact, I wish that I had the ability to both drive and record while getting the post-game press conference live feedback from our managers. So I try to collect that as quickly as possible. You, however, have a little bit different MO. You have a tendency to be like, all right, I need to just decompress. I need to get away from it, shut it off for a little bit, and then we'll come back to it. How are you feeling now after a little post-draft hibernation?
Yeah, and I would probably prefer to talk about it a little bit longer, but you know, we've been doing these live drafts for several years now, which means there's 5 hours of golf beforehand, and then an hour or two of hanging out, and then 3 hours of drafting. And by then, it's been a long day away from the family, and I really need to be getting back to real life as quickly as I can. So it's both, I do want to decompress. Like, I've just got out of the SAT and my mind has turned to mush, and I need to step away for a moment. But if I had the ability to not jump right back into family life, I probably would love to stay another 3 hours, at the restaurant and talk about what we just did. And stepping away from the draft, I always realized, there are some mistakes that were made. I think immediately after, I'm like, couldn't have done anything better there. Then I did a little time to think about it and say, there are some misses. There are some missteps. Could have done some things better. But then I also, I start to look at everyone else's and, I have the same feeling of the auction draft is really hard and our elite has gotten really smart. Yeah. And so almost everyone had to make a sacrifice somewhere on their team. Mm-hmm. There's no complete team coming out of the draft. It's not like everyone walks out of it and says, I am solid, across the starting lineup, and I am deep, and, my bench. You just can't do it. It's just something has to give. You have to make a sacrifice somewhere, and, whether you make the right call, where you choose to do that or not, only time will tell. But I love this episode, and I love going back and trying to recreate the situation, what was going on, because every nomination on the block is a whole story unto itself.
That's right. I have about 10 pages of analysis, data, spreadsheets, charts, things like that nature. Pretty boring at the first glance, but I've enjoyed digging into it. And really, just zooming out, they tell one simple story, and that is that our league, our auction draft-based league, is one tough cookie, man. We have the most intense drafts that I've ever experienced. We have the most challenging and greatest demand to be sharp, be well-versed, be well-researched, and be on our A game, and have a plan, and be ready to navigate, hold loosely, but push forward into that plan in a very, very intense environment where nobody's going to let you get away with much. So I always, and for the past 3 years especially, this year, no exception. In fact, this year I think is more pointed than it ever has been as I look at the numbers. Good grief. These men are sharp, and it is a tough, tough draft. I walked away feeling great about the outcome, considering, but I also walked away feeling like, man, it is push and shove, and you better be ready to defend what's yours inside that draft, because nobody's getting away with anything in that.
Yeah, and as I was preparing for this episode, I was like, wouldn't it be great if you could draft every week? And I don't know if such a league exists, but there, how fun would it be to have a league where you auction draft every week for that week, and then you wipe your team clean and do it again next week, and you just see who has the best record at the end of the season. But drafting is so much fun, and the preparation is fun, and just all the information that is out there for every player, and putting that all into, do I click that button or not? It's just, it comes down to that simple decision point. Do I click the button or not with it? With everything you know.
Going twice.
Just with everything, do I click that button? And it would be fun to do it over again every week. You know, time is not permitting to do so,
not at all.
I don't know if the structure exists, but
not at all. That
would be a blast to just play high stakes, 1 week auction draft lead, and just do it every week. That'd be a lot of fun.
That's a great idea. I think our wives would probably finally draw the line on
different
fantasy
lifetime.
Football.
Different lifetime.
Yeah, sure.
Different lifetime.
Sure. Well, great draft, great setup. Pete, you want to say anything about the overall climate of the draft before we get into the individual manager performance?
There wasn't really a common theme. There wasn't really a common role that I felt like each manager was playing. I remember last year in the 2018 draft, I came away from it thinking, man, Scott came at the end and bid on so many players, sniping them right at the end.
I remember.
Driving up prices or winning players that way. And there wasn't anyone who seemed to be playing a certain part in terms of the price enforcer. It bounced back and forth. You know, our lead has gotten more balanced and sharper all the way around. So it was just there wasn't a time where it was like, oh, now's where you can get all the value players. You know,
right.
Now's when people have kind of fallen asleep at the wheel. It was
right.
It was on point all the time. It was
kind
of pedal to the metal the whole way. And so that was really what I came with, was just there was no break. There was no clear opportunity to get an edge because no one lets you.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I have felt, and looking at some of these charts that I've made, it really was just affirming of what I was feeling and going, man, there are some very general behavioral trends, and that nobody, with maybe just very few exceptional outliers, nobody really looked a whole lot different by the numbers or by the actual performance. I'm looking specifically at what I call the tilt chart, which is basically just a value-based comparison and linear choice view to just kind of, in a snapshot, look at somebody's draft and then compare it line by line. And it just kind of gives me an apples-to-apples look at each and everybody's drafts and as a snapshot. And they're near identical. Every single one of them. There's a couple of moments because of the keeper situation on the front end that affects the curve of the line, but ultimately we all have this very similar draft trend. And when you look at it overall in terms of spending versus value, everybody was holding each other accountable and everybody was going after. There is nobody fell asleep at the wheel. Just like what you said, nobody fell asleep at the wheel. The only small little outlier that I can kind of identify in terms of spending by pick was a late spending of about $30 by Chris on pick number 9. Other than that, that was the only outlier. The only outlier. Other than that, our spending matched pick by pick all the way down, and our value matched pick by pick all the way down. It was just a very consistent draft.
Fun stuff. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about each team one by one. We'll go through a high-level summary of who they picked, and then we certainly want to bring our draft grades into it because those will last forever.
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to go in nomination order. We'll start with Jared.
All right.
And Jared came into it with a keeper of James Conner at $0, probably the best keeper in terms of value. That's really a top 10 pick for $0.
That's right.
Which is great, which is what I should have had if I had been smart enough to handcuff Le'Veon last year. So good job, Jared, in terms of having a solid keeper.
Hey, I just want to point out to you, you made it 19 minutes without bringing up that wound. Well done. Progress.
This should be the last time.
Progress.
This should be the last time until we talked about my team. But this should be the last episode anyway.
Fair.
Now we can turn the page. The Le'Veon saga is over.
Yep.
In my book. So Jared came and used all his $200 budget to take some studs and David Johnson, Keenan Allen, and Mike Evans.
That's right.
Didn't, really two stud running backs, two stud wide receivers. And then Tyler Boyd and Curtis Samuel, a couple more wide receivers, only players he spent more than $2 on. And then filled out the rest of his lineup from there. I thought the one area he punted was at tight end, where he took Austin Hooper. And so if there was a hole in his starting lineup, I would say that would be the only hole there. He's got Russell Wilson at quarterback, which is a great pick, especially for $2. That's probably the cheapest Russell Wilson's gone in a long time in our draft.
Yeah. I love his strategy on the front end. He was very aggressive up front because he did have probably the best value keeper with James Conner. I estimate him. And by the way, tonight when I talk about values, I'm going to use Fantasy Pros as the most objective. I know that their numbers are slightly deflated compared to what they typically go for in our league, but at least it's an external objective measure. So by that account, he had $39 of value going into the draft, which he converted across his next three picks: David Johnson, Keenan Allen, Mike Evans, which had about $25, $12, and $15 of overpayment each. So he used his James Conner keeper really well to get that top RB and a couple of top wides. I think that was probably the best conversion of keeper saving to dollar usage in our draft.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's really what you want to do when you have a low dollar keeper then kind of use that value to get the guys you want. You're not always going to be looking for value across the whole board, because at some point you do have to really overpay to get some of the studs. And so, you know, he's got four of them. He's got two top 10 running backs and probably two top 10 wide receivers. I'm not sure exactly where Keenan Allen and Mike Evans fall, but they're you know, in that top 10 conversation. So that's a really strong foundation to build a team around.
Absolutely. So in terms of his power, I would say that Jared has, based on his draft, he aimed heavy for his running backs, but was not too far behind on wides. In fact, by my calculation, in terms of my kind of subjective point rating, he was second in terms of running back points, and he ended up being, seventh on the wide receiver scale. That was a pretty tight race, but he was low on his tight end for sure. That's where he ended up kind of dropping off. He put everything up front, and he ended up being fourth lowest in his QB pickup. So he definitely aimed for those power positions, running back and wide. Not a bad strategy by any means. What do you think about his overall draft performance?
Overall, really solid team, strong foundation, strong core, and you know, he even has some flexibility to drop some of his bench players who aren't, you know, cornerstone players. It's not the kind of bench players where you just hold on to them for a long time. You're able to drop them if other opportunities come up. So I really like this team, really like this build. I give him an A.
I also like his team, and I gave him a B+.
All right, that's Jared. So next we are going to Michael's team. Michael, let's see. He did not have a keeper because that was his punishment for dropping to last place last year, losing the loser's bracket. So obviously he was kind of down a little bit to start the draft. And I don't feel like he really ever made up ground from there. I think he started behind, stayed behind. There was never a pick that I felt he got value out of. He built his team around two wide receivers, two running backs again here, Antonio Brown and Brandon Cooks for $50 and $31, and then got Dalvin Cook and Josh Jacobs for $61 and $29. Of those picks, I like Josh Jacobs the best. $29 for a guy who should be playing full-time with Oakland. That's good. He also got Kyler Murray for $1, which I think is a strong pick in terms of upside for the rookie quarterback. Beyond that, there's not a lot that I like here. I think I'm down on Antonio Brown.
Definitely.
Cooper Kupp is his third wide receiver. I'm wary of Kupp coming back from an ACL injury months ago. This isn't my favorite team, and I probably will give this one my lowest draft grade.
Yeah, when I look at his team and I look at who he picked up, there's a couple of questionable decisions. I think Dalvin Cook was kind of his most drastic overpayment. And I look at his overall base, and I like Josh Jacobs this year, but when I, and like, as you said, I was hesitant on Cooper Kupp, Most of his team to me reads like a really good team 4 or 5 years ago. When I see Antonio Brown, Drew Brees, Carlos Hyde, Marquise Brown, these are names, even Jordan Reed, these are names that I would anticipate being kind of on the old school depth chart and not so much this year. And so by the number, even though he does have a couple of quarterbacks that rank him higher, in the points spread, his overall point base put him in a solid C.
I can't even go that high. I've got him a D.
Yeah. Well, let me explain something about my grades while we're at it, by the way. I graded everybody in a curve, and my lowest grade this year is a C-. And I think that goes based on the fact that I'm going by a point spread that was pretty locked in and objective, and I did not curve it across the F all the way up to the A. Which means that it's a little bit more gracious this year. So bear with me on that. But I do have two what I would consider to be on the lower end scale of the curve. And Michael is the second to last with a C.
Okay. All right. Moving on to Andy. He tipped Chris Carson for $4. And then he came out swinging to get Odell Beckham Jr. for $73. Todd Gurley for $42. And then he spent for David Montgomery, Mike Williams, and AJ Green. Overall, this is, I've got some question marks about a couple of these players, especially Todd Gurley and AJ Green. I'm really not sure what to expect out of Gurley. He's been the best running back in fantasy for the past few seasons, but I think this year is going to be different with some of the health concerns, and I certainly don't think he's going to have the every down role that he's had the past few years. So I think my expectations are lowered for Gurley, and then AJ Green won't play at least the first week, it seems, and who knows exactly when he'll come back and how effective he will be when he does. So in that case, I think maybe a little bit of a slow start out of the gate. I do like the keeper of Chris Carson, and I do like Odell Beckham Jr., though $73 for him seems like a lot. I think that's the tied for the most expensive player with Saquon Barkley, who you would say is probably the number one overall pick in many drafts. So a little bit of an overpay on OBJ there, but I think that was probably a little bit of a scarcity of available studs left. I think at that point there was really only OBJ and Julio were the only two top 15 players left.
That's right.
And so if you won one, you had to pay for it. So not a lot of value gained here for Andy outside of the keeper pick.
Yep. Andy was tracking on a value draft and was going really well until his degree of desperation came about. And on pick 5, like you said, scarcity drove him up and he ended up overpaying for OBJ by about $35. It was a big, big dip. But I will tell you that even though Todd Gurley isn't, the number one running back choice and AJ Green isn't necessarily the number one wide choice, he got value on both of them. And that it wasn't bad pickups. And then David Montgomery, same deal. Not a huge over expense. He saved money on Lamar Miller, which was good. Latavius Murray, all the way down. In fact, he was sitting, in terms of value comparison, he is currently sitting in fourth place after the draft, and he would be in first. He's actually in the green across every position with the exception of that OBJ pickup, which knocked him down negative $25 in the wide column. So good value draft until he got scared, freaked out, and overpaid for OBJ.
Interesting. At tight end, he's at Delanie Walker. I think that's a great pick, especially if you're punting the position and you're not going to pay for one of the top guys. Yeah. I think Delanie Walker will come back and have a really strong year. Yeah. And then Jared Goff at quarterback, also a kind of a value grab there. Not going to blow the doors off, but should be kind of very serviceable.
Yes, yeah, very safe. Yeah. For sure. What grade did you give Andy this year?
I'm going to go with a C+.
All right. I gave him a B.
I think it's a well-rounded team. I just, I think there's some question marks on some of the bets he placed.
Agreed.
All right. Moving on to Brock's team. Brock kept Michael Thomas for the whopping price tag of $41, thanks to the rule changes. And then he got the Dane back together. Same wide receiver core he had last year with DeAndre Hopkins. Paid 71 for him, and Robert Woods paid 25 for him. Those three were very big in his championship run last year. At the expense of getting those wide receivers, he essentially has no running backs.
Zero.
Phillip Lindsay and Duke Johnson, which at the time, Lamar Miller's ACL was intact, so he really hit the lottery there with Duke Johnson, who's now thrust into the starting role with Lamar Miller out for the year. And then Daryl Henderson, which I like as a third running back, but not really someone you want to be starting every week. Deshaun Watson at quarterback is a great pick, especially for only $10, I think, because he could be the number one quarterback this year. And then Vance McDonald at tight end for $7. I thought that was a great value grab late in the draft as well. At the tight end position, he's kind of right on the bubble of he could be a stud tight end this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I think there's a good team outside of the running back position. And now I guess you could say Duke Johnson shores up the RB1 spot. And so he only has one question mark at running back, as opposed to before, I really think it was two question marks at running back. So if I was grading this, you know, right after the draft, I would have a different draft grade than I do today with Lamar Miller out.
Yeah, absolutely. That definitely saved his bacon. Coming out of the draft, he was actually ranked fourth from last in his running back core. But his luck of the Irish definitely saves his tush going into week one, having a top-tier running back now who's going to get a lot of more snap and play time for sure. What grade did you give Brock this year on his draft?
I will give him a B+.
Nice. I gave him an A-.
All right, moving on to Charles. Charles kept Evan Ingram for $0 at tight end. Locked that up right away with a top six tight end.
I think that's a great keeper, by the way.
I think that is a great keeper. And I think it is right in that range of tight ends that you want to be. And for $0, I think that one will work out nicely because the Giants have no one else to throw it to, really.
That's right.
Then he came out huge,
strong, with
picking up Ezekiel Elliott as the first nomination on the block for $66, and then also grabbed Saquon Barkley for $73, locking himself into the strongest running back group for sure. He also got Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, who is probably the number one consensus quarterback this year. So as you might have guessed, with those running backs and that quarterback, he has no one at wide receiver.
Zero wides. In fact, this was his positional pickup. After the tight end in number one as his keeper, he went Zeke Elliott running back, Saquon Barkley running back, Patrick Mahomes quarterback, Justin Tucker kicker, which was followed by James White running back, Corey Davis wide, and even Sammy Watkins in there. No more overall over expense for sure. He played for value for the remainder of the draft, which he had to. He absolutely had to, and he didn't overpay on anybody according to Fantasy Pros after his Saquon Barkley dive. The Fantasy Pros ratings, the ESPN ratings, and the rankings that kick out of that, they love the studs. They if you have a top three stud in any position, man, you're winning the playoffs according to them. And in this situation, I think that Charles' ranking is no different. It's hard to look at his front end and not be a little nervous because, man, he's got the power for sure. When I look at his ranking on my system, he's ranked number two or number one, depending on what I'm looking at overall versus position. So his depth is what I think hurts him in the long run and why I don't give him as top of a chop as something like a power ranking would week to week in an ESPN or fantasy drafting. I ended up giving Charles an A for a good team, but I don't think he's number one.
Yeah, I think I probably disagree with the Fantasy Pros ranking and with your ranking probably the most on this one because, you know, I did having the strong core, the studs, Zeke, Saquon, you know, you're getting, two top five picks there in all of fantasy football. That's, you know, really fun to build around. But, you know, so he's solid at running back one, running back two, quarterback, tight end, He's got James White in the flex. That's good too. But the wide receivers, just, you know, Corey Davis, Sammy Watkins, Jarvis Landry, Larry Fitzgerald. Those guys are, you know, they're two slots behind.
I forgot about Fitz.
They're two slots behind where it should be. So, you know, you've got a wide receiver three level player in your wide receiver one slot, a wide receiver four level player in your wide receiver two slot, and a wide receiver five level player in your wide receiver three spot. So I can't get past that. I'm giving him a B.
That sounds fair.
All right. On to Chewy, who kept Kerryon Johnson for $0. Another strong keeper there. And then he came out with, I think, I would say a really balanced draft. He
Absolutely.
Got Joe Mixon for 47, Melvin Gordon and Austin Ekeler combination for a total of 25, which was a steal. He got Austin Ekeler for way too cheap. I couldn't do anything about it at the time. And then his wide receivers are Amari Cooper, Stephon Diggs, Allen Robinson, Calvin Ridley. Those are all very solid picks. And then Baker Mayfield at quarterback and Jared Cook at tight end. So, I'd say balanced draft. I think this is the team that didn't punt a single position. If you had to, say one team that never punted between, your wide receiver one, two, and three slots, your tight end, your running backs, there's no really soft spot here. So I think the only possible issue here is are these ceiling plays? Are these upside picks?
That's right.
And that's where I am not so sure. I think I would like to see more upside than I see on this team, but I think that's also what we said about Derek's team last year, and he scored the most points in the league. So maybe the really balanced draft is the way to go. I don't hate the draft. It's just I think it's a different strategy than what I certainly was going for in my draft this year.
Yeah, Chewy executed a balanced draft better than anybody that I've seen, because he not only managed his value, I mean, his value curve on his tilt chart is gorgeous. I mean, it's just this perfect walk down of steadiness and discipline. I actually sent him a screenshot of it this week and said, dude, it's hard to beat this man. Well done. The only reason I came on top of him on value rating was because I had a better keeper. That's the only reason. He actually ended up doing really, really well. He placed fourth in running back points in terms of power for running back, and he ended up placing second for wide receiver points. And so even though he was executing a balanced draft, I don't, at the end of the day, think he picked up a bad team doing it. And so I think that Chris had an absolutely phenomenal draft. I praise it highly, and I gave him an A.
I'm going to give him an A-. I think it's a really solid team. Like I said, different strategy than I would go for, but executed his strategy well, and it's a really strong team.
Yep.
All right, next we are going on to my team. I kept Lamar Jackson for $0. I think I had some regrets about that after the fact. especially seeing how much Dalvin Cook went for, I was like, I should have kept Dalvin Cook, but I tipped Lamar Jackson for $0. Two of my first three picks were Travis Kelce and George Kittle. Then I got Devonta Freeman and Mark Ingram. And as you might have also guessed, my wide receivers suck also. I got Alshon Jeffrey, Robbie Anderson, and then a grab bag of players after that. Also picked up Dak Prescott as another quarterback. So we'll see what happens there.
I mean, I hear Anthony Miller looks great.
Not on my team anymore. So,
I feel like you're trying to rush through this, Pete, but
we actually
have questions.
Yeah, I know there are questions. So I feel like I ended up with the most unconventional draft in this season, and probably that we've seen in a long time. There's three stud tight ends this year. There's Kelce, Kittle, and Ertz, or at least they're the three last year. I think most would call them the three this year as well. And I didn't intend to get two of them. and when I ended up with two of them, so I wanted Kelce because it's kind of a scarcity play there. Yeah. There were so many of the top 15 players kept. I wanted to make sure I got one of them.
That's fair.
And I didn't want it to be a running back. I felt like the way the draft was going to play out, I liked the running backs in the $30 to $40 range the most, as opposed to the wide receivers in the $30 to $40 range. So I wanted to pay for a stud pass catcher, then come back and get running backs in the $30 to $40 range. And so I did that because I got Kelce for $64, which I was fine paying for that. It was either him or OBJ or Julio, and they both went for $73 and $68. So I was fine getting Kelce for $64 at that point. You know, I had to have one of those guys. And I got Devonta Freeman for $30. I got
Which Mark is not a bad pickup. I think that's your best pickup, by the way.
Freeman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's a good one. And I like Mark Ingram for $25 too. And then I ideally would have got another wide receiver in the, you know, $35, $40 range. It ended up being Tittle. So it's like, instead of a wide receiver, I got a Tittle. And so, which I'm also fine with the value there. I don't mind paying the $37 for Tittle. I think that that's the right price for him. The only problem with it is that it limited my flexibility from that point on, because now I have my flex spot locked up. It's going to be Kelce and Tittle every week, except for bye weeks. And so, that made, you know, really forced me into, well, I can't really chase a third running back that I think is a good value because I couldn't start them. And then I had to get wide receivers, but I was, you know, kind of budget limited there. So that's how, you know, some mistakes were made, and how I ended up with the team that I have with, you know, really weak at wide receiver.
Yeah. I don't mean to put you on the spot or anything. It just felt so out of character and unconventional that a couple of us were scratching our heads and in debrief going, I know you had a thought and a strategy, and I think I could reverse engineer the idea of going, okay, you can get, especially Kelce, he belongs in the top tier, top 10, top 12, top 15 bucket of what you're going to shell out for, regardless of being a tight end. It just felt a little lopsided when your tight end, it started to feel like that was the alternative to your wides completely, which was, that was probably the most confusing part for me, going, why the offset? Why the lack of targeting even a mid-range wide and instead of a lower range tight end? So needless to say, I was a little confused, but at the end of the day, I don't think you have a terrible team. You definitely have the tight end ranking locked down. You are in first place for tight ends, in case there was any confusion there. I am sorry to tell you, you are third from last in wide receiver.
Better than I thought.
And you are in last for, well, have you seen Ben's wide receivers there? And you are,
I saw Charles's.
Yeah. Yeah. You are in, yeah, he's second from last. You are last for running back, according to my point scale here.
Interesting.
I at the same time, you actually have a good quarterback option, and so if anybody's willing to trade, the problem with the tight end trade is that it doesn't feel like it's on par with wides or running backs, even if they may be their stud or the positionally ranked top two, top three. You know, it still feels like you're trading up if you're trading a tight end for a wide or running back.
Yeah.
Because it's just not a universally understood value perception that they, it's not apples to apples. It feels less than, and I think that has to do with the touches and the lack of it. But at the same time, I've watched the league evolve, and the slot and the dump have become a much more, just like the pass catching running back dump over has become a much more offensive approach to the game. So we'll see. Maybe you'll be able to trade away those things.
Yeah, and we'll see how it works out. But yeah, looking at the landscape this season, there were only seven tight ends that I would want on my team.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's, you know, that's the most scarce resource, is a, you know, locked in starter at tight end. I didn't want to play the streaming game because it doesn't go well. Like, a couple years ago, I think it was easier to stream tight ends.
I agree 100%.
And now I think it's evolved to where these tight ends are really wide receivers.
That's
they're
right.
Not,
and that's why, because the league,
they're not
changed.
Blocking all the time.
That's right.
They are running routes all the time. That's like right. Travis Kelce is not a blocking tight, you know, he's a wide receiver. Like, I put him right there with, you know, any wide receiver one.
100% correct. And we talked about this before the draft, about how the tight end value is going up a little bit. I didn't think you'd take me so seriously. I was worried that maybe I had caused a little bias to be planted in you, like, and set you on the wrong target. But 5 years ago, if you didn't have Jason Witten, then it didn't matter. You just stream a tight end, and that was it.
Yep.
And now you actually have to consider what kind of short slot offense are you going to pick up. Tight end wise, like, who do they play for? And like you said, they're going to bring in that rotation in the lineup. So
yeah,
I don't think you're wrong. I just think, like many things that you do, Pete, you're just a little ahead of the curve. You're just a little ahead. And maybe it's this year that you prove us all wrong. I do think it's coming where the tight end balance will continue to be driven up, and there's more of a battle and more of an expectation. And I bet we see that in the game, where a lot more wide receivers are converted to tight ends on the draft point coming out of college playing professional ball, assuming that we have the NFL next year. But the overall for you this year, I don't think it's going to happen. Your point base for your team as a result of the appropriation towards tight end has you pretty low in most places, which puts you at the point bottom, not quite the very bottom, but I gave you a C+.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, my team is kind of I forced myself into a very different roster construction, which I thought was interesting, and we'll see how it plays out. A little bit of trying to zig when others are zagging. I gave myself a B-, because I think it'll work out all right, and it's a little bit of a scrambling of the brain to try to, you know, look at two tight ends locked into the lineup like that, and, you know, not see the major holes at wide receiver. But I think
this is fine.
never be said that I was not interesting, right? So I'll go with a B-, which might be a favorable to myself. All right, next up on the nomination order was...
Hang on, I just want to point out the fact that you gave yourself a bump in your grade merely out of the interesting factor. That's
oh, yeah.
Just, okay. All right.
Next up, Scott Tepped Tyreek Hill for $40. And then he rivaled Michael's overpay of Dalvin Cook by getting Nick Chubb for $64. He also got T.Y. Hilton for $40, Aaron Jones for $31, and then didn't really have any cash left to spend on anyone after that. So he's got Chubb and Jones, Hill and Hilton at running back, wide receiver. His quarterback is Mitch Trubisky. And at tight end, he's got Eric Ebron and Blake Jarwin. So here I feel like Scott punted two positions, but the quarterback and tight end.
That's right.
You know, Trubisky can be good, but extremely inconsistent.
That's the problem. And he's kind of rolling the dice on it. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it drops off very quickly after the core four here. And I don't know if, you know, the Luck retirement had not happened yet, so that really hurts T.Y. Hilton's ceiling. So I think Stott's team is stumbling a little bit out of the gate here.
Agreed. His wides are not terrible. I don't think that he's got the worst core in that regard. And he picked up a really solid defense. So other than that, I struggle. He definitely dug deep onto Nick Chubb, which I thought was a little questionable in terms of the spending on that. That might have been a head for the hills and grab a running back while you can, based on when you can. T.Y. Hilton and Aaron Jones were not over expenses for him, and the rest of his picks were either on target or for value. He did pay a little more for the Jaguars. He dug deep on that, and yeah, there's only a couple of $3 defenses annually. So ultimately, though, I think his draft is pretty scattered. I don't like rating Coach so low, but he's at the bottom of my scale here. And as a result of that, I went ahead and I gave him the C-.
Oh, I am also giving him a C-, which is not the bottom of my scale, but that's where I'm putting him.
Fair enough.
All right, next up is Ben, who tipped Davante Adams for a second year, and this time Adams was $42. Really, a lot of high-priced keepers this year.
Yep. Well, that's the thing. It's easier to protect your player than it is to throw him to the wolves.
That's very true. I was a year too early when I tapped Le'Veon for 48. See, I'm just really.
That's what I'm saying.
Trailblazer.
You deserve a little extra grade just for that reason. Give yourself a letter.
Yeah, thank you.
Just for being ahead of the curve.
I'm up to a B.
Little special snowflake.
After Davante Adams, Ben grabbed Leonard Fournette for 43, Le'Veon Bell for 62, Zach Ertz for 35, and then he did not have any money left after that. So his quarterback is Carson Wentz, and his second and third wide receivers are Kiki Kuti, Devin Funchess, or Adam Humphries, some combination of those. So big drop off at wide receiver after Davante Adams. I think here I've got a question mark for Le'Veon at 62. He was away from football for a year. That's not what I'd want. I don't think I was ever going to own Le'Veon this year. I'll just say it that way.
Yeah.
And then Ertz for 35. You know, I got Kittle for 37. Ertz went for 35. That makes me feel better about the Kittle purchase. Obviously, if I had seen what Vance McDonald and Hunter Henry and O.J. Howard had gone for a tight end, as well as Chris Godwin and Tyler Lockett at wide receiver, I would not have liked the Kittle purchase as much. But I definitely think I would rather have Kittle for 37 than Ertz for 35.
I agree. Based on the tilt chart, I look at Ben's team and I don't dislike a couple of the picks on the front end. Obviously, Davante Adams as kind of foundation on the front end is not terrible, but he converted that into Le'Veon Bell. He probably thought he could just use the risk factor to save a buck or two, which he did. Zach Ertz, same deal. But he's got a severe drop-off after pick number four. It looks kind of like he turned on auto bidder at pick five and beyond.
I do like Carson Wentz at quarterback. I think he'll be a really good play as long as he can be healthy. He has so many weapons to throw to in Philadelphia. From that standpoint, he's at quarterback. I like Fournette at running back, and I think Le'Veon will be just fine at running back. I just don't think he'll be the same player he was with the Steelers. Different scheme, different offensive line, different coach who doesn't like him as much as the last coach, all that sort of stuff. And then the hole's a wide receiver.
Ben also might be ahead of the curve and going, man, tight ends are where it's at. But he just didn't execute as well as you did. he certainly drafted the most of them. And I imagine he'll hang on to what sticks and drop one or maybe not both. But he's got a few options between Burton, Ertz, and who was it? It was Mark Andrews.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and give Ben a C grade for his draft here.
I think that is fair. His quantity of tight ends makes up for everything else. I do like his quarterback picks. I gave him a C+.
All right. We're moving on to Derek's team. He tapped Juju Smith-Schuster for $25. He added Julio Jones at wide receiver for $68. And then at running back, he's got Derrick Henry, Kenyon Drake, and Tevin Coleman. And Tevin Coleman might be the best of those three, and he got Coleman late for $6. I thought that was a great buy.
Yeah.
Tight end, he's got David Njoku and Darren Waller. And quarterback, he's got Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton. So I think this is another fairly balanced draft. Not quite as balanced as Chewy, but I don't think I mentioned he's also Josh Gordon at wide receiver, as well as Will Fuller and Sterling Shepard. So I think Derek might have the strongest wide receiver group in the lead. It's either him or Brock. They both have two studs. Brock's got Thomas and Hopkins, and Derek's got Juju and Julio. And then rounded out with solid picks after that, Josh Gordon and Fuller and Shepard. Those are all, I would start all those, they would all start on my team for sure. So yeah. I know that's not saying much. It's not a high bar to do it over, but really solid wide receivers. I don't love his running backs here. They're all either not pass catchers or they're all in committees. And like I said, I think Tevin Coleman's the best of them. So I think he punted a little bit at tight end and running back, but he does have really solid wide receiver group.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have him as either one or number two in the wide receiver rankings. What's fascinating about the numbers of Derek compared to maybe Brock or Jared that also has a pretty strong wide core is that Derek only went -$8 in value comparison to Fantasy Pros, as opposed to Brock, who went -$24, and Jared, who went -$29, which means that Derek only overpaid by $8 to have either the first or second best wide core in the league.
Nice. Excellent analysis.
Well, thank you, sir. poker face. Algorithm. Overall, you can look at Derek's team as a balanced draft, and his tilt chart echoes that of Chris's. But he has a lot of firepower, if I may say, and I'm not just pandering at this juncture.
I was going to ask. I was going to ask. We needed a firepower rating for sure.
He does have the power. In fact, points by position, he's number one in my system. I gave him an A+.
A+. Wow. I think you're overcompensating for last year.
I'm not. He's my he is my only A+.
Wow, number one draft grade for Derek. I'm giving him a B+. I have to ding him for the running backs and tight ends. I feel like those are some holes there. But yep, the wide receivers really are strong enough that they could carry him every week anyway.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, where his points make up for the running back hole is that he is mid-range on his tight end. But like you said, the wide receiver core and his quarterback options are really good. That's where he ends up coming up on top with more points.
Got it. All right. Moving on to you, good sir.
Yes.
We've only got two teams to go. We're plowing right through this. You kept Alvin Kamara for $33. Still a good value keeper there.
Didn't think it was the worst decision.
You added Damian Williams for $30 to round out the running back room. Then Adam Thielen, Julian Edelman, and Dante Pettis are your wide receivers. And at quarterback, you got Matt Ryan. And then tight end is O.J. Howard. Really, I think you ended up with an overall pretty balanced team here. I think I'd say the wide receiver dollars were not my favorite in terms of, I feel like Thielen for 40 is a little bit high for me this year, as well as Edelman for 47. I think those are probably higher than I would like to have paid, and so I think it hurt the wide receiver three and the backups after that. But I really like your running backs. Kamara is definitely a top three back, and then Damian Williams for 30 was a really sharp add, and he's definitely a sexy player this year. I just more of a lightning rod player this year. Some people feel negatively about him. I think much higher on him, and I would have bid him up higher if I hadn't spent more money at that point in the draft. So good pick there.
Thanks so much. I had a strategy going into this, and that was that I was going to sit back and wait just a little bit because I knew I wasn't going to be able to convert like I did last year my incredible savings and channel that straight into a number two or number three running back situation. I knew that wasn't going to be possible, so I thought, okay, I'm going to get some top 10 wide receivers out of this. But in order to do that, I need to sit back and wait just a little bit, which means that I'm going to go for a little bit more of a steady walk down draft, go for value in a couple places, but I'm going to save my dollars, and I am going to have to go big on my sleeper research. Like, that's what my primary focus of draft strategy was, is to say every pickup after, let's say, pick six had better be exactly who I want it to be, and it better be a well-researched, like, no accidental pickups. Every one of them needs to have potential. And so that was my plan going into it, and I felt really good about the execution of that. Obviously, Andrew Luck retired 2 hours later. That wasn't the best moment, but no big deal there as a backup, since I'm counting on my boy Matt. I'm really excited about Dante Pettis and seeing what flushes out with him. Jalen Hurd, I'm excited about him in the wide spot. Greg Olsen is really more of a backup for me, but Jordan Howard looks really good this year. Sanu looks good this year. I'm excited about Miles Sanders, DJ Howard. These are all players that I aimed for that I was excited to get, and so my target success rate, if anything, was keeping me on cloud nine. Now, we'll just see if they produce.
Yeah, it's not like there are a couple spots where you're just targeting an offense. You've got Dante Pettis and Jalen Hurd from San Francisco. You've got Miles Sanders and Jordan Howard from Philadelphia. You know, something should shake out of those, and we'll try to see who rises to the top and brings you that upside you're looking for. So I like your team overall. I think you've got a good core. I like OJ Howard at tight end. I think he's going to be a great pick. Matt Ryan is extremely underrated at quarterback.
I got him for cheap too. I was excited about that.
Yep. So a solid team. No major holes here. Maybe a wide receiver three, because I don't know what Dante Pettis is going to be.
Right, at this point. Yeah.
There's some comments from the coach that make me wonder if how much he's going to be used this year. So that could change, but we shall see. So I've got you at an A minus.
Thanks so much for that. I appreciate that. I also have myself. Well, I gave myself an A. I didn't ding myself a minus, but that's because I'm biased.
It's your team. Did that you like it? All right, Chris Windsor, maybe best for last. We shall find out. Is that Christian McCaffrey kept for $48, the most expensive keeper? Keeping a running back for $48 always works out, as I discovered last year. Okay, that was the last time. That was it. Done.
63 minutes, just right. In case we're tracking.
All right. He also got Sony Michel and Marlon Mack at running back. His wide receivers, I really like this group. It's a fun, exciting young group of wide receivers: DJ Moore, Chris Godwin, Tyler Lockett, and DeeDee Westbrook. They would all definitely be the best wide receiver on my team. And he's got Hunter Henry at tight end. I really like that pitch as well. And then my boy, not really, Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback.
Yay!
That's the punt position here, though, is Roethlisberger at quarterback. Sure. But if there's any position you punt, it's a quarterback, not a bad way to punt. So I really do like this team. Actually, it's another very balanced team. No holes across the skill positions at running back, wide receiver, and tight end in my book. Hunter Henry's a great value to me at tight end. Chris Godwin for 27 and Tyler Lockett for 30. I think those are both really good picks. I liked both of them a lot more than like both the Vikings wide receivers. I would rather have Godwin and Lockett because of the upside. And I definitely would have paid for them if I'd known they were going to go for $27 and $30 as opposed to Kittle. So this is my cross to bear in terms of what happens when you get two stud tight ends. But Chris's team, I think he didn't have the best value keeper, but I think if you wipe out the keepers, he got the best value across his team elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree with that notion. I lost my place in the charts. He had, in my mind, the most interesting tilt chart, in that it was more of what you'd call, I don't know, a sinus wave. Was that what that is? When you have a more consistent wave, because Christian McCaffrey, Sonny Michael, and then his kicker in Greg. I've tried to pronounce this correctly. I've heard it several ways.
His nickname is Legatron. That's how you pronounce it.
Legatron. Okay, sure. I've heard that too. And then he ramps back up with some spending on DJ Moore. Got pretty good value there. Chris Godwin, Tyler Lockett spending a little bit more, and then dropping back down, picking up his defense, Hunter Henry at his tight end, and then Marlon Mack, in which he got quite a bit of spending on Marlon Mack deep in the pick at pick number 9. So he had kind of this interesting pattern within his draft where he would go high to low, back up to high, back down to low, back up to high. And I'm not sure if that was intentional and he planned that out and mapped that out, or if he was just picking them as they came or just aiming for value, which is where he ended up thriving. So overall, I did like his draft quite a bit. His total point column had him in third place. I do think his quarterback situation is a little weak, but he is strong in both wide receiver and running back. And he's got some decent options in his tight end, and he's got arguably the number one defense and the number one kicker. So he's got some good, strong options. He's just not the strongest on the front end of his power positions. I gave him a B+.
I think I'm going to give Windsor my only A+. I like his draft. And it's that's probably just me getting a little bit too excited about some of these players. like the Godwin and Lockett pick, but I like those a lot. And so he did my only A+.
All right.
So we are done with all of the draft grades. If I look back on it, I gave out 4 in the A range. I gave out 4 in the B range, 3 C's and a D. I just, you know, threw these off the fly, but that's a pretty balanced spread. Happy with that.
Yeah,
you gave out 5 A's, 3 B's, and 4 C's. So also pretty balanced, but I think you like people's teams more than I do in general.
Well, I do, and I think it, again, goes to show just the demonstration of the fact that our league is really good. And overall, when I look at team power and positional ranks, nobody has lagged behind to a great degree. And ultimately, I think that the numbers reflect that.
Yeah. So now everyone can feel hurt or cursed. I think that's probably the more likely scenario, is that like Windsor's going to say that I've doomed him now to failure by giving him my top overall grade, or get offended like Derek last year and just continuing to bring it up even 12 months later in terms of lack of firepower comments and such. So. Hard to remember everything that we said right now, but I'm sure it will last in the hearts and minds of our fellow lead mates for much longer than it lasted in our mouths.
That sounds about right. All right. Well, I've got some data that answers some interesting questions for you. Now, don't worry. I'm not going to bore you here. I find some information that I consider rather fascinating that I want to share with you. Are you up for it, Pete?
Bring it.
So I thought you might be interested to know who was the manager that waited the longest, after keepers, of course, to actually get in the game of the draft?
And actually win the first player? Or so, win their first player?
That's right.
Good question. Was it Michael?
No, Michael came in at pick number 12.
Interesting. Was it Windsor?
It was not Windsor. In fact, actually, Windsor came in shortly thereafter at pick number 15.
All right. Well, now you gotta tell me.
I give up. It was actually me.
Huh.
And it was pick number 26.
Oh, yeah. You did sit there and yell at people to start spending their money a lot before you actually did anything. I remember that. Yeah, okay. That sounds right.
It was a diversion. You didn't have to be insulting.
I wasn't insulting. That was factual. Okay. You kept yelling, "This is too cheap. This is too cheap. He's going for too cheap. Guys, spend your money."
I did it one time. So, do you know who the first player to purchase, or rather to nominate and then successfully purchase, their kicker was?
Nope.
It was not Andy, in case you're wondering.
That would be shocking.
Yep. In fact, true to form, Andy waited until pick number 15 of 16 to get his kicker.
Like and a good American.
That's right. And then picked up his defense in pick number 16. I mean, the way tried and true, classic. Andy is true to form.
That's how God intended it.
Apparently. No, it was actually Chris Windsor. He picked up his kicker. He was the first one to nominate him in his third pick.
Well, Dodger changed the draft grade.
Yep. It did start the windfall, though, because after that, Derek picked up a kicker, and I picked up a kicker, and then Charles picked up a kicker, and then Jared picked up a defense, and then a kicker. It was definitely, and all of that happened between picks 3 to 7.
Yeah, that's the point of the draft where people are, like, out of ideas. If you nominate a kicker or a defense that early, it just shows that you are lacking in creativity and forward thinking, yep. And you just need a mental break. That's where you go pre-flop raise, post-flop raise, and then the turn comes out, and you're like, check. And then the river comes out, and you're like, check.
Yep.
Because it says, I got nothing. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. I need a break.
Yep. A couple of other pick decisions that stood out to me. 8 running backs were picked up in the second pick, or the first live pick of the draft, and only 2 wides and only 1 tight end. Well done, Pete.
Thank you. At least I'm different, right?
Hey. Like I said, special snowflake. Let's see.
That was another thing that is early in the draft. A lot of times we see those, you know, really top of the, you know, top 5 players. Sometimes they go for a bit of a early draft discount where people are afraid to spend their dollars. And, you know, Zeke went for 66. Maybe that was too cheap. Saquon went for 73. Maybe that was a couple of dollars too cheap. Mm-hmm. David Johnson went for 65. Maybe that was a little too cheap, but it wasn't egregious. Where I think we've seen it before, you know, the first pit goes for something like 64, and it's, you know, one of the top overall players. And then you see, you know, the, you know, kind of 10, 11, 12th best players going for over 70.
Right.
Just because people are like, oh, no, they're all gone. All the studs are gone. We didn't see that as much this year. You know, you still saw a little bit with Odell Beckham going for 73. You know, same price as Saquon is a little bit off.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that kind of echoes that I thought was super interesting numerically was that this year, and you can correct me if your numbers look different, but according to my data, I show that our league purchased $1,022 worth, according to Fantasy Pros, worth of running backs. And we did it with only $990, which means we actually had a $32 savings on our running backs this year, as opposed to our wides where we spent over $1,000. We spent $1,097 on only $958 worth of wides, which means that we had a loss of $139 in the wide position compared to the running back. I would have never expected wides to be such a competitive and overspended position this year. What do you think of that?
That's interesting. I would probably need the context of how it looks in prior years to see, is that a shift in how our league is spending, or is that simply because Fantasy Pros values wide receivers for a lower amount than we typically do?
Maybe so. Yeah, that's a fair point. In terms of value by position, it looks like overall, I think my keeper value is what kept me in the lead. Chewy was in the lead for most of the draft in terms of his value picks, and Derek was right behind him. I squeezed out a little nudge at the very end, and it put me in first for value, according to Fantasy Pros. Care to guess who was tied for last two players at negative $35?
Michael and Scott?
Michael and Ben. Not too far
Michael
off.
Michael and Ben. Yep. All right.
Yep, Scott was actually ranked fourth from last, and you, my friend, were third from last. Those tight ends cost you a pretty good run. You overspent $32 on your tight ends.
Says you.
Well. Hey, man, time will tell. Time will tell. Maybe this is the year, like we said earlier. Maybe your forward thinking is going to catch up to reality this year. I hope it's so, because it's the greatest fantasy football league in the world, and this is its podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.